Hey. And now for the part you've all been waiting for. It is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Mike.
Got it where you want it? Okay. My name is Mike Krieger, and I'm an alcoholic. This is a good thing. I don't know about you guys, but I plan on having a little bit of fun tonight. I want to thank Bill for... Bill called me or texted me, contacted me here not too long ago and asked me would I please come on my anniversary date and speak. And I said, yeah. And the first thing that went through my head was, how in the world does he know when my anniversary is? And I spent alcoholically hour and a half trying to figure out. Pat finally said, probably on one of those sign-up sheets that you put your date on when you go to. Oh, yeah. Still kind of works like that for me. The really exciting thing is I have no idea what you're about to hear. No idea. So that ought to be fun. But there is one important thing. I don't know if I'll say anything else important. The most honest and truthful thing I can say to you is my name is Mike and I'm an alcoholic. That is as pure as it gets. I didn't have that understanding when I got here. So everything else is going to be based on the best that I can remember. You know, I'm 64 years old, so there's a little caveat in there. But the really important thing that I do want to remember is for anybody here that is new, for the people that came up and took chips for months of sobriety, and if you didn't do that and for whatever reason, or you don't have 30 days yet, or whatever it is, I want you to understand, and I hope you take this and use it to your advantage somehow. We all know how to do that. But I want you to understand that all these people sitting in this room in front of you have been in the chair that you're sitting in right now. They've gone through what you're going through right now. No matter how bad you might think your situation, your circumstance, your life is, somebody in this room has already experienced it and hasn't had to drink as a result of it, hasn't had to drink at it, and they just moved through life. Having said that, I didn't want to hear any of that when I got here. None of it. So let's... I brought a couple of bookmarks because there's a couple of things that I wanted to be sure that I said right tonight. December 13th, 2017 is a lot different than December 13th, 2017. Or 1985. Here's what I did today. I'm currently the secretary of a new group that I've kind of joined, and I'm thrilled that somehow I found this group and I've gotten to know some new faces and people on a different level in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was up early. This meeting starts at 7 in the morning. Get there, make coffee, kind of clean up a little bit, and participated in this meeting. Great. Just a great way to start my day. I had plans to go do something, and in the middle of the meeting, somebody said something, and I thought, no, I need to change that. I need to go do something else. So I drove an hour, roughly, over to Avenel and spent the morning with my mom, which I don't see nearly enough. Came back. That was funny. I'll tell you that. I called my mom, or I texted my mom and said, hey, are you up for going to breakfast this morning? She's 84. And she said, yeah, sure. So I get there. She opens the door, and it's like, what hurricane just came through here? I mean, it's just, she's in a pair of old sweatpants and a sweatshirt. Her hair's not done. That's not my mom. And I said, are you ready to go to breakfast? She goes, oh, I already ate. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. If you say you've already ate, you're afraid I'm going to say, oh, well, then I won't come over. So yes, she fixed me breakfast. So, but came back, took a little nap, read a little bit, watched a little TV. Some friends of mine are here from Bakersfield, you know, friends that I'm fortunate to have in my life. Friends of mine from Ventura are here. We went to dinner, and I came here. And I'm positive that when I leave here, I'm going to be sober, and I'm probably going to make it until I fall asleep. 32 years ago today, I kind of came to in the middle of the day. I'm in a hospital room in St. Agnes Hospital in Fresno. It's my last day of detox. So I come hopping out in my fashionable hospital greens. And I make my way over. I'd filled out some paper. I told them what I wanted for lunch. I don't remember doing it. And my lunch was there. And I took it into a room about half this size. And there was nobody in this room, just me. And I'm eating my lunch in the back. And I'm not part of the group of people yet. But that's going to be tomorrow. So this is my last day to be by myself, which was really the only place that I was ever comfortable before I got here, ever. And all of a sudden the door opens, and in walks one of the counselors, and he's got all these fools that are in this place with me in check, in tow. I'm eating my lunch here. And he doesn't really care. He starts talking. I silently expressed the only emotion that I knew at that point in my life, which was anger, just absolute rage. I am a fighter, but you'll never know it. I will hate you forever and not give you the satisfaction of knowing that you got to me. That's who I am. So this guy starts talking, and I'm trying to eat faster so I can get out of there because I know that I don't have to be here. And then he does this. This is not even day one for me. He writes this on the board. There is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Day one. And the anger kind of ramped up because somehow, some way, I heard it. I saw it on the board, and I knew they were talking about me. I didn't know how they knew, but I knew that they were talking about me. So I get to go the next day. Another thing happened. I go into this little group, and the way they did this thing was you guys went in one group, the women that were in this program went in another group. In the afternoon, everybody was in a big group, and it was a lot of fun. The next day, they hand me this book, and they say, here, Mike, read this. So this is day two. It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. And then they said, just think about that. We don't really need to hear from you. So I had to sit there. So 2 days, two things out of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm lost. I'm angry. And I really don't know what to do next. But because I was where I was, one thing was evident in my mind. I was completely out of choices. Family, friends, everybody said, get out. I want nothing to do with you. My plan was to go to this place, regroup, kind of start my life over. I had no idea what was about to take place. The worst thing that can happen to you this is somebody call you a month and a half ahead and said, do you want to do this? And so you spend the next month and a half trying not to think about this. My memory of my childhood, which is, I thought was absolutely everything. Turns out not so much. It just is what it is. But I've come to understand the longer I stay sober, what I remembered and what actually happened in a lot of cases are two different things. Completely two different things. I always would talk about the fact that my dad left when I was 8 years old. My stepdad came in when I was 9, 10. I don't know. I don't really remember. He was an outstanding human being, my stepdad. Outstanding. When he showed up, I was in fourth or fifth grade, and I was bigger than him when he showed up. At 10 years old, I'm 5'7", 125 pounds, something like that. He told me later on in life that his goal was to be my friend. Yeah, I don't need any friends. I didn't need any. And what that boiled down to was I just never took any direction from that man. He never attempted to discipline me, ever. And so I always told the story about how I lived in this unsupervised home because nobody cared about me. I'm 64 years old, and I learned this story. At 17 years old, my stepdad walks in and says, "Your uncle has to leave the state in a hurry." We all know what that means. He has a car that has 1 year of payments left on it. It's $150 a month. If you make those payments, you can have the car. Miss one, and I'll let them take it away. Well, I worked all the time when I was in high school. Yeah, I'll take it. This was 1970, and this was a 1968 Firebird. So I'm pretty well set up for a 17-year-old kid. So it comes there, you know, and my stepdad was an avid hunter and fisherman. This is what I found out a month ago, roughly. I come home from school one day, four brand new tires sitting in the yard, and they're for me. You know, well, of course they should be. Everything should be for me. That's how this works. A month ago, I found out that my mom came home that day, saw those tires sit there, and she went to my stepdad and said, "Where'd you get those tires?" And he said, "The money I've been saving." Well, he was an avid hunter and fisherman. He'd been saving for a long, long time to buy this special shotgun. And she said, "Why would you spend that money on those tires?" He said, "I can't have him driving around with those old ratty tires in that car." He never said a word to me. Not one word. I didn't know. I mean, he's been gone for almost 10 years now. I didn't know that that's the man that I was raised by, because I started drinking at an early age. And at that age, it became all about Mike, what I wanted, when I wanted it, how I wanted it. That's how I lived my life. I will never forget. Okay, well, I'll do a little funny story. How's that? My days at the end of my drinking were pretty sad. It was kind of bad. They started in the morning with Coors and cocaine, and by night they ended with tequila and time travel. That's kind of how those days went at the end. But it wasn't like that in the beginning, you know. I asked my parents, "Can I go on the 3-day weekend to the coast with five of my buddies?" They were all a year or two older than me. Their answer was no. So I went. I left on Friday after school, showed up Monday afternoon. Now, on this trip, something really kind of cool happened if you're a sophomore in high school, and I was. We're in Paso Robles, sitting at a light. Guys don't move, honk the horn, no big deal. We've been drinking all day. Get out on Cuesta Grade, going up the hill. All of a sudden, there's this car behind us flashing its lights. There's six of us. There's four of them. Oh, we're going to have some fun now. We're going to have a lot of fun right now. So these guys are kind of pulling up beside us, and we're gesturing, waving to each other, and we just can't wait. So we go up over the Cuesta Grade. We go down in the first turn off we can get into San Luis Obispo, and I'm sitting by the door in the back seat. My buddy, who my friend Steve and I grew up with, is in the middle. This guy's lost his mind. I mean, he's probably the fighter amongst us, but he can't wait to get out of this car to get his hands on these guys. So I rip the door open, I step out, and I turn around and look, and getting out of that car as if it was out of a movie scene, all four doors open at once, step four of the biggest men I've ever seen in my life. And I went from, I'm going to kick somebody's butt, to trying to shove my buddy back into the car, because I know we're in trouble. We are in serious trouble. I don't know what that honking of the horn, how it made those guys so mad. Might have been some of the things we did on the road on the way over. But that resulted in them chasing us through the streets of San Luis Obispo for what seemed like hours. At one point, we found this big square block, and we just went around that block about 50 times. We grew up out in the sticks. We had a .22 rifle laying in the floorboard. So at some point, we just stuck it out the window, and they kind of veered off. And we lost them, we thought. We made four or five, six turns, wound up in this residential neighborhood. We're standing there just, you know, laughing and carrying on. And all of a sudden, these guys come flying around the corner. We're out of the car now, and the car's not running anymore. So now we're on foot. Running, six of us running from these four men. Turns out they're off-duty police officers. You know what? Nobody got in trouble. We all went home. We had a destination that night. It involved females. We made it to that destination. And I went home on Monday. You know, the six of us, at least in my mind, we're like legends now in school. You know, once this story circulates through this little school of 300 kids, we're pretty impressive. But Monday afternoon, I'm standing in my bathroom. I'd just gotten out of the shower and I'm shaving. My parents walk up and they said, "Where have you been?" "I went to the coast." "I told you not to go." "Yeah, you did." They said nothing. They turned and walked off. I got permission to do whatever I want to do. So if I can do that at 17, I can do it at whatever age I want to do it. Those were the fun days. Those were the fun days. Bill sent me an email kind of explaining or suggesting what the Valley Group promotes and what they like from their speakers. It has to do with the three legs of our triangle and a spiritual awakening and how my experience relates to that. I'm kind of paraphrasing that. But, you know, and I really appreciated that because there's some guidelines there. Because those fun days ended. Those fun days became days where I had to do those kinds of things. Now, when I'm running from somebody, it's serious. There are consequences that are going to have to be paid. And I don't know how to not run. I don't know how to not stop doing the things I'm doing. Once I take a drink, there's no telling where this is going to end. On my 30th birthday, I walked into a bar that I went into on a regular basis. So regular that when I came through the door, the bartender put the beer that I drank on the bar before I ever sat down. I remember I have a visual of that beer right here to that day. And the next thing I knew, I'm in another town, and I had to get on an airplane to get to that town. And I have no recollection of other than coming to in this other community. It's kind of hard to explain, you know. No cell phone, no texting. But it got like that. And it became necessary to do things that I knew better. My mom, every time I left the house when I was a kid, she'd say, "Mike, remember, you know the difference between right and wrong." Yeah, I do. I just kind of happen to prefer the wrong. There's not a lot of excitement in the right. But I knew, you know, something inside of me, I knew that the things that I were doing, was doing to support my disease were wrong. And the worst part of it all was I thought there was nowhere that anybody could ever possibly understand what I'm going through, what I'm dealing with. If you had my life, if you had been raised the way I was raised, you would do these things too. You know, that's what's the word they use? That's a delusion. Bolstered by my ego and my own selfish, self-centered motives. But I didn't know that when I walked in here. I didn't know that. My very first day in that place again, at some point they said, you know, Mike, what do you think your problem is? And I started talking, and I wound up talking about my dad, my real dad. And I wound up crying, and which is a no-no. We always all know that. And at some point, the guy cut me off, and he turned to these other men in this deal, and he goes, what do you think? And they all said, it sounds like he's in denial. What? What does that even mean? You know, and so I started to ask the question, and this counselor goes, no. Just think about what they said. Well, I don't even understand what that word means. That's all right. You'll get it. So, I kind of accelerate this here real quick. At the end, it wasn't fun. The drinking wasn't fun. In 1985, on October the 11th of 1985, my daughter was born. I already had two sons. My daughter was born that day, and I was on the 61st day of not needing alcohol or drugs in my life. Because 62 days ago, I had to dive into a pool to pull my 18-month-old son out of a pool that was drowning. And that was so traumatic. He wasn't breathing. He had to be revived. Spent the night in Valley Children's Hospital. It was so traumatic that I knew that the way I was living was wrong. And I knew that I could change it. And I knew that it would take kind of a religious type of experience for me. I'm all for that. What a gift. My son didn't die. 61 days. My daughter's born on the 62nd day. I went home from the hospital. My mom was there watching my boys. I got in my car. I took a shower, asked her if she'd watch the boys for a few minutes. I have no recollection of any thought that I have. I drove about 35 miles out into the country. I committed a felony by breaking into a farm shop. I stole nearly a pound of cocaine, and I was gone from October the 11th until December the 13th of 1985. Every day, my day started waking up in my living room floor, getting right, taking a shower, going across the street from my house, getting a six-pack of beer to drive out the 12, 15 miles it was to my office, piddle around there for a few minutes, get in my car, drive to Fresno. When I got to Fresno, turn around and drive back. When I got back, turn around and drive to Fresno until 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and then I'd go home, lay in my floor, and wake up the next day and do exactly the same thing. That went on for the last at least 2 or 3 weeks. I never suspected, none of my neighbors were doing this, that this wasn't anything out of the normal for me. What happened for me in this program is nothing short of a miracle. Our promises say, this little phrase that you'll hear in meetings, you'll find it in this book, but you'll see it on the wall some places. God could and would if he were sought. God will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. When I got here, I don't want any part of that. I'm going to divert from that for just a second. December the 13th is a road sign for me. It's the day I got sober. Two most influential men in my life are my grandfather and my first sponsor. They were born on this day, but I didn't know that when I got here. And as I look out here right now, I can't tell you how it makes me feel to see the thread of sponsorship that's weaved through this room. The connection between the men that I know that are connected to each other in this room and how important it is. I didn't want anything to do with the sponsor when I got here. Just no part of it. It took me 90 days and a lot of pain before I asked. Those phrases that I just used, they began happening for me before I ever knew what they were. In this place, Christmas, let me go back one other thing. December the 13th, 1982, I knock on a friend of mine's door thinking I need to go to his house to go to the restroom. I drove by 50 restaurants, 100 gas stations, everything, to go to this guy's house. He opened the door and I said, I can't live like this anymore. I need some help. I never did use the restroom. And he took me through a religious experience. 3 years to the day before I got sober. 6 months later, I'm driving down the road going, this crap doesn't work. And I was gone. So this day, all of a sudden, became kind of a road sign for me that there's something here. I don't even have to understand it, but I can recognize it. You know, there's something going on, and before I get to it, I can feel it. I can see it. I can hear it in the things that you guys are saying. Then it happened again. I'm in this place for 2 weeks. Christmas Day. I've been a really good boy. In fact, I'm probably the best guy in this whole place after 2 weeks. They let me go home for Christmas. Home, man, I go to Avenel where all my family was, my brothers, sisters, everybody there. Nobody wanted me there. It was obvious the minute I walked through the door. I don't really care. I'm just 2 weeks. 2 weeks. But something happened there. I saw in my boys' eyes they were afraid of me. Time to go back to the place. I go back. I don't know why this is happening, but this anger, this one single emotion that I have, just keeps welling up and welling up. By the time I get back to this place, I am angrier than I've ever been in my life. And they say, get on the bus, you're going to a meeting. I discussed that with them for a little while, and then I got on the bus and I went to the meeting. And in this meeting, a bunch of guys like Gary right here, you know, like Larry, you know, a bunch of guys like this, they're taking this vote to close this meeting to people from the recovery home. Okay, that's it. Who do you think you are? I'm so done. So what I do, my fight is I got up out of my seat and I walked out of the meeting and I'm going to get my car. I'm out of here. And I got stopped by a 19-year-old girl. She convinced me to go back upstairs and tell Larry and Gary and these other guys just what I thought of them. And so that's what I do. I sit down in my chair and I interrupt this meeting and I'm about to tell these guys, well, you can shove your vote to tell me I can't come here. Who do you think you are telling me that I can't come in this meeting? And I said, I can't live like this anymore. I need some help. That's what came out of my mouth. And that's what happened. The whole room. And then they called on the next guy. No clue what happened to me right there. No clue. I go home. I run to this place. That's what I want to say. You know, this meeting this morning really, really touched me. they reminded me. I'm a boy from Avondale. So I am. I learned how to be a man in a little dumpy room at 106 Lincoln Street in Oildale. You know, it's just nothing special, you know. But yet, as a result of this program, I'm living a life that I could never possibly imagine. And that's the magic. That is absolutely the magic in this. Is that when I think about I remember being in this room desperate, out of my mind. I remember being in this room feeling like if these people knew who I was, they would run me out of here. You know? And in the next breath, sitting there and thinking, who are these losers? You know? That's how scattered it was from one extreme to the other. And I couldn't find the middle. I would fly by it so fast, I could never find the middle. But I began to do the things that you said. Except I wanted nothing to do with God. Nothing. Don't talk about it. Say higher power. And you guys became my higher power. And it was like that for 18 years. Now, I could talk about it. I could sound good about it. But I wasn't quite connected. Book talks about an educational variety, learning this process, learning what a higher power is and what a higher power does. And I was kind of all for that after a while, and I kind of went along. But I don't know really how to get to the truth. You know, most of my life has been like that. It's never been about the truth. It's been about my truth, what I need, but not the truth. I fought the spiritual aspect of this program for a long, long time. What I finally discovered was God wasn't fighting back. It's just me in the fight. There's no resistance there. You want to go off and be an idiot? Go ahead. I'll be right here when you get back. And you know the funny thing is, I've had guys call me on the phone. I had a guy that I sponsored that was a treasurer of the group that I was part of that had taken a couple of $1,000 and he called me and said, I'm drunk, I've got the money, I don't know what to do, but I'm not coming back. And that's what I said to him. I'll be here when you get back. And that's been my experience with my higher power that I have come to, God, called God of my understanding, is he never fought me. And I've spent time with him and away from him since I got here. And that can happen now. Right now. If I'm not careful. I'm never farther from God than when I'm trying to tell you what my opinion is. It's just how it is. The book says we cease fighting anything and everything. And oh, by the way, alcohol too. Kind of like an afterthought. Which tells me that this really didn't have anything to do with that. This had to do with the fact that I'm trying to run the universe by my will. And I will lie, cheat, steal, whatever it takes to get what I want. And sobriety is no guarantee. Years of sobriety is no guarantee that that can't happen to you. About 8 years ago, almost 8 years ago, I was not in a very good place. Not in a very good place at all. But I didn't know it because I just disconnected a little bit from you, a little bit from God. Some of the morning stuff I do is not as consistent, just a little bit at a time. And I don't even recognize that suddenly I'm completely disconnected. I have a major problem in my life. My business is failing. I know how to fix it. I know how to fix my business failing. I just got to adjust these little forms here. That's all you have to do. I'll fix it next year. I'll make it right next year. Next year comes. It's worse. Okay, I'm going to work really hard this year, and I'll fix it next year. Sound familiar to me? It's like, man, I am not doing that tomorrow night. I am not stopping by that bar. I am not having one drink. And the next thing you know, I'm calling my wife to say, I don't know how I got on the airplane, but I got on the airplane. Same process. My will leads me 4 years, 5 years, 6 years later to some people of authority walking into my office and say, we think you've been doing something you shouldn't be doing, and we think you should pay for it. And that took place a little over 2 years ago. And not one time in that process did I ever think I need a drink. I was done running. I was done fighting. I remembered the words that the men that have helped me in this program said. My first sponsor used to say all the time, if you've truly taken step three, everything is exactly the way that it's supposed to be. Well, that was, in that situation, that was a little hard to swallow because I really didn't like the situation that I was in. But I knew in my heart that I had created it, and I was willing to say, okay, fine. Reyes is my sponsor here in Visalia. Long before I asked him, I saw him in a meeting one time. And the meeting was one of those meetings where I don't think we're really talking about what we ought to be talking about in here. You know, sometimes that'll happen in an AA meeting. And then they called on Reyes and he said, you know what, you guys, I come here to hear the message, not the mess. And that's what I had been telling myself for 4 years. You're dealing in the mess again. You know, you have set aside what God has in store for you to take your own direction, your own advice, and look where you're at one more time. The beautiful part about that is this. I paid my consequences. I'm still paying my consequences. And I'm good with it. It led me to the most consistent period in 32 years of making contact with God as I understand Him. And now it's every day. It's every morning. It's every night. I'm starting to do things like, that guy just cut me off. Let me see, what's my reaction? Let it go. You know, just little things. The main thing is that the instructions that I have found in this book, they were written for me by people like me, and I'm just like you. In fact, I'm exactly like you. I love that. I was not exactly like anybody before I got here. Now, I could be whatever you wanted me to be, but we weren't ever connected. There was nothing that associated me with any other human beings. I sat in the chair in my bedroom. I don't know. Right at the end, something had happened. I had to go to the hospital. You know, my wife is there. I have a 2-month-old daughter. And 20-month-old son and a 5-year-old son. The boys are crawling all over me, you know, and she's trying to understand, and she's, I don't understand why you do this. And I said to her, you're right. You don't understand. I am the only person on this planet who gives a crap about me. That was what I said. And I meant it. You know? Nothing could be farther from the truth. I mean, there's the truth over there, and somewhere in the distance, I'm over here. These two boys didn't give anything, care about anything other than just crawling on their dad. That's it. You know? I didn't know how to care for me, which meant I didn't have a chance to care for you. This program has changed all of that. Through the three legacies that we have. Recovery, unity, and service. You come here, you do the best you can. And you don't drink in between. You don't use in between. And you try your best. You know, and if you put your head on your pillow tonight, like I'm going to put my head on my pillow tonight, it's going to be a good day. It has been a good day. And what my time here gives me is just more experiences to draw from to know that, yeah, odds are tomorrow's going to be a pretty good day too. I'll tell you, I got a call from the IRS a couple days ago. Some guy in the IRS, kind of associated tail end of this thing that I'm dealing with and whatever, he wanted to know some stuff, you know. It might take me, I don't know, in the old days, a year or two of dodging his calls before he'd probably come and try and show up at my front door because I lived in so much fear of what was going to, you know. Oh, this guy just wanted some simple information. That was it. Oh, okay, let me call this guy back. Blah, 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 you know. That wasn't the exact, I mean, the first reaction is still that fear, but the experience of starting my day by saying, God, tell me what you want me to do today. And then looking for those moments during the day where go, I'm not sure what to do here. And then laying down at night and going, thank you for getting me through this day. Those simple little things, that fear of the big monster pops up and it's like, oh, wait a minute. I've got something better. I got something to take that away. What I used to take that away before took me away. It took me away from everything, from everyone. Most importantly, myself. This is an amazing program. If you're new, I hope you stay here. Because all the things that you hear from all the people that you hear them from, they're true. They're absolutely true. What you don't know if you're new is, can it be true for you? There is only one way to find out, and that's to stay here. Stay here and do the things that we have done. If you have questions, if you have those questions in your mind and you're new, grab one of these guys before you leave this meeting tonight and say, nothing more than, I think I have a couple of questions. So thank you all for being here.